Having decided 50 times that you are going to favorably impress Mr. Brown, then you get down to it and talk to him as if he were actually in front of you, as I have said several paragraphs ago. So that is really all there is to it. You should handle your beads very frequently to imbue them with your personality, to make them part of you, to make sure each one slides properly, to make sure that you can flap the wretched things around without having to definitely think about moving them. It has to become second nature to you, and if you have other people in the same house with you, then the best thing you can do is to have small beads which you can keep in your pocket. Then you can put one hand in your pocket and move around, and nobody will know what you are doing except being so slovenly they think that you keep your hand in your pocket all the time. Now, once again I am going to tell you that yes, quite definitely you can win a sweepstake by using mantras, but only if you know exactly who is going to make the sweepstake draw. If you are going to get a positive action, you have to know who you are going to act upon. It's too utterly foolish for anything to say that you are going to do a mantra for the person in charge of such and such a thing. That's no good. You must actually know the person who is organizing a draw or who is going to draw the ticket from the box or whatever it is. If you cannot do that, you cannot place any faith at all in the mantra. It means that you must address your remarks to some subconsciousness and not just fritter your energies into idle space. Is that clear? If you know, then, that Mrs. Knickerbaum is running the race for the Slithering Snakes Society and the take is going to be worthwhile, then you can address your remarks to the subconscious entity of Mrs. Knickerbaum, and if you do it on the line suggested in this chapter, you have a good chance of success. Unless someone else is doing it and they've got a bit more think power than you have, in which case you lose out. But a warning, there is a warning to everything. You've got to stop and give way to approaching traffic. You've got to yield here, you've got to halt there, etc., etc. Everything is a warning. So here is another one for good measure. Money which has been acquired by means of a mantra like this really brings happiness. Most often it brings misery. And if you want it entirely for selfish reasons, then you can be quite sure you are going to get misery. So don't do it. I have had letters from people saying, "Oh Dr. Rampa, I do want to win the such and such a sweepstake, and I know you can help me. You let me win $100,000 and I'll give you 20%, that'll make it worthwhile for you, won't it? I'll give you the number of the ticket, etc., etc." The answer is, "No madam, it is not worth my while. I do not believe in gambling, and if I go into this with you for 20%, then I should be as culpable as you. And anyway madam, if I wanted to do this, why should I do it for just 20% from you? Why shouldn't I do it myself and get the whole lot of money?" So many people see advertisements for infallible schemes for winning at the horses, and they don't seem to realize that if the propounder of the infallible scheme had indeed something which was successful, he wouldn't be selling the idea to someone else for a dollar or two. He would be making millions using his own infallible system. That's right, isn't it? It might be a good idea here to say a bit more about these people who are so anxious to pray for one. I get a lot of letters from people who say that their group will be praying hard for me, etc. Now, I don't want anyone to pray for me. They don't know what I am suffering from, and it is definitely, definitely harmful for all these praying people to mumble off their prayers without having the slightest idea of what they are doing. Let's mention something which is capable of concrete expression, something which can be used as an example. Prayer is most often useless except in the negative sense and so cannot be demonstrated. Hypnotism can. Let's say that we have a girl suffering from some complaint. Well-meaning friends insist that she go to a hypnotist. Now, being a bit weak, she goes to this hypnotist. The man may be very well-meaning indeed. He may be carved of solid gold with jeweled insets, but no matter how well-meaning he is, unless he is a qualified medical man, he doesn't know about the girl's illness, and so, although without any doubt whatever he can disguise the symptoms from which the girl is suffering, he cannot cure her, And if he disguises the symptoms or conceals them so that a qualified doctor cannot find the symptoms, then the girl might become worse and die, adding a load to the hypnotist's karma and to the stupid friends who sent the girl to the hypnotist. As I know only too well, if one goes to a hospital in acute agony, the medical staff there will not give one a drug to relieve one of the pain until they have studied all the symptoms. Only when they have become acquainted with all the symptoms will they do anything about relieving the pain. Obviously, the symptoms are the things which tell the doctors what the patient suffers from. So when we get people praying their heads off, they might by some accident of telepathy cause a sort of hypnotic effect and induce a suppression of some vital symptom. I always look on these people who want to pray for me as my greatest enemies. I always say, God protect me from my friends, my enemies I can deal with. So no more prayers, no more prayers, unless you're definitely and positively asked by the sufferer to pray. If the victim asks for the prayers, then that lets you off the hook, but until then pray for yourself, you probably need it as much as anyone. Someone wrote to me and took me to task, saying that I couldn't have any friends at all, saying that no one could possibly like me because I only mention people who write rudely. As a matter of fact, she was a women's liver, the lowest form of human existence so far as I am concerned, so perhaps it might be a good thing to tell you now about some of my friends. Some wrote to me, others such as Henry Mendelssohn, who I'll tell you about later. In that case, I wrote to him. It has its problems, I suppose, writing about my friends, because if I mention them just as they come into my mind, that stupid women's lib person who writes so often, always full of hate, will say that I am mentioning men before women or something, so I think I'll mention just a few of my friends alphabetically. In that way, surely no one could be offended. For the benefit of some people, I will say now that I will not give the address of any of these people that I mention. Now, just a week or so ago, I received an unstamped letter from a man who said, state names and addresses of people who can do astral travel so that I can check up on you. The poor fellow was so much of a bum that not only did he omit putting a stamp on the letter, he didn't sign it and didn't put an address either, so I hope he reads this and can appreciate my explanation that I never, never give the names and addresses of other people without first receiving their written permission. I have had a lot of trouble with people getting in touch with me asking about others, and I am always irate on such occasions and give the rudest rejoinder that I can think of. So I give certain names of certain friends, not all my friends, because I am not compiling a telephone directory, but just certain people who spring quickly to mind. But under no circumstances will I give their addresses. Yesterday we had a visitor, one whom we were expecting. We as Mrs. Rampa, Mrs. Rouse, Miss Cleopatra Rampa and Miss Tadlinka Rampa, as well as myself. Soon a great big station wagon rolled up and out came John Bigras. We have known him quite a time. We knew him first when we were at Habitat in the city of Montreal. Biggs, as we call him, encountered me there, or would it be more correct to say that I encountered him? Anyway, we liked each other and we have kept a very close association ever since. Biggs used to be a top flight salesman for medical products. He got some sort of award on two or three occasions for selling so many goods. But then when we left Montreal, he came to the conclusion that there wasn't much future for him in Montreal, so he followed us all the way across Canada, driving a mobile home thing with himself and his two cats. Wayfarer, the gentleman cat, is a most immense creature and extremely kind-hearted. His wife Cat is a gentle creature who is about half the size of Wayfarer. They all settled very comfortably in Vancouver, where Biggs has a job that he likes, a job that affords him plenty of movement, plenty of travel, and a chance to meet people. And his cats keep house. Yesterday, then, Biggs and two cats came here to Calgary, and they are staying near us for about a week while they have a vacation. Biggs thinks Calgary is a nice place, but, of course, it is very small compared to Vancouver. Never mind, diamonds are small things, aren't they? And lumps of coal are not. Biggs, then, could be classed as one of our closest friends because we see most of him and we are in contact 2 or 3 times a week by telephone. There are 2 ladies who were among the very first to write to me when The Third Eye came out. One of them is Mrs. Cuthbert, so I can say good gracious me. I must have known Mrs. Cuthbert about 17 years. We correspond quite frequently, but I have never met her. So another of my friends, then, is Mrs. Cuthbert, and I will mention the other lady later alphabetically. I have to remember that woman's liver who is my bit noir. Now we come to a real rough diamond, a man we all like very much. Frog's Freno. The frog's bit is because he is an Englishman descended, ascended would sound better, from an old French origin family. He is always addressed here as Frogs, anyway. Now he lives in New Brunswick. We met him when we lived there also. He is a fine engineer and although he sometimes speaks quite roughly, growling like a bulldog or worse, he still has a heart of gold. Mind you, now that I have written down heart of gold, I wonder how a heart of such a metal could work in a human body. Never mind, metaphorically speaking, heart of gold stands for Frog's Freno. I remember when I was staying at a hotel in St. John, New Brunswick, Frogs drove me there and he heaved and he hoved and he puffed and he roared, and he pulled my wheelchair backwards up a flight of steps. It nearly killed him, mind, and it even more nearly killed me. But we got up that flight of steps with poor old Frogs looking like a frog should look when he is all puffed up. So let me say, hi to you, Frogs. Hey, I'm still on the Canadian continent, so let me mention another one. My good friend Bernard Gobeil. Oh yes, we know Bernard very well, he is a very nice man indeed. He used to be, in a manner of speaking, my landlord because when I was living at Habitat he was the man in charge, he looked after things, and he looked after things very well indeed, in fact he looked after things too well because he was so efficient as an administrator that he got moved from Habitat and sent as a sort of troubleshooter to another big apartment complex where they were having troubles. Habitat wasn't the same with Bernard Gobeil missing. And so as I was having trouble with the press as usual that proved to be the last straw, and off my family and I went far from those haunts of Habitat. But Bernard Gobeil and I keep in touch, in fact I had a letter from him this morning. I wish he was here, I wish he was my landlord now, but Calgary is a long way from Montreal. But why don't we take a trip? Let's go further than Canada, let's go to Brazil for a change. In Brazil there is a most eminent gentleman, Mr. Adonai Grassi, a very good friend indeed. He is learning English especially so that we can correspond without the intervention of a third person. Adonai Grassi is a man with unusual talents, a man with drive and compassion. He is not one of those ruthless dictator-type people. He is a man well worth knowing, one of the best type of man. And I predict that he will make his name known thoroughly in Brazil and elsewhere. So how can I send my saludos in Portuguese? But he knows what I think of him, and I do think a lot of him. Shall we go a bit further to greet a gentleman from Mexico, Mr. Rosendo Garcia? Agreed, he is now living in Detroit, USA, but he is still a Mexican, definitely one of the best type of Mexicans, a gentle, educated man who wouldn't hurt a fly. A gentleman of the world who has had many, many hardships definitely not of his making, one whom we could say with absolute truth is on his last life. Next time he will indeed go to a much, much better round of existence. Back again we go to greet my friend Mr. Friedrich Cozin in Brazil. He is a friend of Adonai Grassi. Unfortunately I wrote quite a lot about Mr. Cozin but he sent me letters and a cable protesting at what I said about him. He is too modest or something like that. Frankly I don't know what it's all about, but I will just say that he is a man closely associated with Mr. Grassi. Now, back to a real old stager, my dear old friend, Pat Loftus, who I met oh so many years ago. Mr. Loftus is a gentleman of nature. One of the finest men one could meet. He is retired now, but he used to be an Irish policeman, one of the guardias, and as a policeman he had a most enviable reputation as a kind man but a stern one too. I admire Mr. Loftus very much indeed. We have kept closely in touch, and if I could have a wish granted, that wish would be that I could see him again before either of us leaves this world. We are not so young now, either of us, and there's not much time left, so I fear that this will be a wish unfulfilled. Mr. Loftus was one of that gallant band of men who founded the Republic of Era. He was one of the heroes of those early days, but he was not favored by chance, by fortune, as so many of the others were. If fortune had smiled a little, Pat Loftus would have been at the head of state in Ireland instead of a retired policeman. Yes, Mr. Loftus is one of my oldest friends, one of my most esteemed friends, and I am sure that living beside the Irish Sea he often looks out, as he tells me, and thinks of me 3,000 miles away. Well, Pat Loftus, I think of you, my friend, I think of you. But we've got to come back to Canada thinking of Mr. Loftus and the way he sits beside the sea looking out towards Canada, and that reminds me of Sheila McMoran. She is one of the people who wrote to me and whom I have met, and yes, she is a friend. She is a woman of many abilities, many talents, a most capable woman and one whom anyone could like. A bit further on your journey again, my friends do seem diversified, don't they? And let's get back to Montreal again and discuss a very particular friend, Henry Mendelssohn, whom I have referred to as being the most honest man in Montreal. Yes, and I certainly believe it. Some time ago when I was in New Brunswick, I wanted a used camera. My wife was idly flicking over the pages of the evening newspaper and she said, "Well, why not write here, Simon's Camera, Craig Street West, Montreal?" So I was a bit slow on the uptake, but eventually I did write to Simon's Camera, and I received a very satisfactory reply from Henry Mendelssohn. He treated me as an honest man, no cash in advance business with him, no waiting until the check was cleared or anything like that. He treated me as I like to be treated, and not only have I dealt with him since, but we have built up quite a warm friendship, and I hope he likes me as much as I like him. He has had quite a difficult life, taking over the business from his father and building it up until now. I am absolutely positive that he has a bigger stock, a more diversified stock, than any other photographic store in Canada. Sometimes, just for amusement, I have asked him if he has such and such a thing in stock, and always the answer has been, "Yes, so, Mr. Henry Mendelssohn, it's a pleasure knowing you, my friend. And you have a distinction in that I wrote to you, you did not write to me. Shall we have another M? Okay, let's move across the border to the USA and say hello to Mr. Kyle Moffat. Because of his interests I have christened him Paddleboat Moffat. He makes models, superbly accurate models, ship models, of course. But as I told him, there's no point in making silly old galleons and ancient ships that go along by the wind. He ought to make paddle boats, and so he is doing just that. Some months ago he made a beautiful model paddle boat and sent me some photographs of it, but then he sent the paddle boat as a gift and, do you know, our customs people here in Calgary wanted to charge such a fantastic price on it that I couldn't afford, and nor could paddle boat Moffat. And so I was deprived of one of the few pleasures left to me. I was deprived of having this model which had been made so lovingly for me by a very good friend, Paddleboat Moffat, in the USA. The model had to go back because the customs people wanted hundreds of dollars in customs duty on a handmade thing, and they were most unreasonable about it. Still, it's only what one can expect from customs people. I have never got on with them at all. This time we are going to do some ocean hopping. We are not going to stay on the North American continent, although, of course, we've got to come back. We are going, instead, to Japan, Tokyo. Here lives a very good friend of mine, one who first wrote to me and then who came to see me all the way from Japan, Kathleen Murata. She is small, highly talented, but doesn't appreciate her own abilities. If she could only realize those abilities, she could succeed at book illustrating, etc., because, as I say, she is enormously talented. Kathleen Murata is an American woman married to a gentleman of Japan. I think she suffers greatly from homesickness. I think she wants to get back to the USA even though that country is just about flooded as an aftermath of Watergate. But she wrote to me, I suppose, in the hope of getting someone to correspond with her as a link within the North American continent, and we have established a very firm friendship. She came to see us when we were at Habitat, Montreal, and she stayed with us for a time in our apartment. We like her a lot. But back again to Canada. This time to one of Canada's islands where live Mr. and Mrs. Orlowski, Ed and Pat Orlowski. They are talented, too. Ed is a most skillful craftsman, he can do modeling, he can do all manner of artistic things, but he has never had a chance in life. He came from old Europe and, I suppose, settled in Canada, and he brought many of the old European skills with him. But I suppose he is on his last life on this earth, and as such is getting more than his share of hardships. He has a very poor job, very, very poorly paid, and yet, I tell you truly, the man is a genius. All he needs is an opportunity, all he needs is a bit of financing so he can make his statuettes, his figurines. At present I have given him some designs so he can make pendulums, touchstones, and Eastern type pendants, things at which he excels. Yes, I'll tell you what I'll do, I'll give you his address, I'll break my rule, so that if you want to order some wonderful articles you can write to Ed Orlowski and find out what he's got available. All right, then, here is his address, Mr. Ed Orlowski, Cavehead, York P.O., Prince Edward Island, Canada. Not too far away from that place is a very good American, Captain George Bud Phillips, a most admired friend of mine, a man who goes racing around the continent in a Learjet. He is senior pilot for a very big firm and he certainly sees life, usually from above 30,000 feet. I know Captain Phillips quite well, and the more I get to know him, the more I get to admire his sterling qualities. Let's move a bit to the right and then we can call in on Mrs. Maria Bean. She is a Swiss woman married to a Chinese, I'd better say Chinese man, or our women's libber will write and ask how a woman can marry a woman, although I understand they do nowadays. In fact, I read something about it recently. Anyway, Maria Peen is a woman with such a lot of abilities, but unfortunately she has a family and the family takes up a lot of her time. And when you have a family taking up time, then you have to put aside your own inclinations, don't you, and get on and look after your responsibilities. So, hello Maria, glad to mention you as a friend of mine. Another one, this time a man. Brian Rush. He is an old correspondent of mine too. We have been writing to each other for oh, I wouldn't like to say how long, to be quite honest I can't remember how long, it's such a time ago. But he is one of my earliest correspondents. Ruby Simmons is another. She is the one who wrote to me, well, I think she wrote to me, actually, before Mrs. Cuthbert did. As far as I remember now, Ruby Simmons was actually the first correspondent in the USA, and we write regularly, and that is why she is listed here as one of my friends. Away in Vancouver there is a lady who attracted me very much because of her interest in bonsai, that, you know, is Japanese dwarf trees. Mrs. Edith Tiro knows a lot about gardens and plants and all that, and we have made quite a friendship because of our mutual interest in dwarf trees. As a matter of interest, she came to see me the weekend before last. Of all curious things, she got in her car on a Friday evening and drove 670 miles or so from Vancouver to Calgary. She stayed at my house a very short time indeed, and then hopped back into her car and drove all the way home to Vancouver so she would be ready for work at the start of the week. Now, isn't that a good friend for you? One who will get in a car and drive 670 miles twice? Well, I suppose she got a breath of fresh air doing it. But anyway, she was certainly welcome here. Move on again across another ocean to Eric Tuddy in England. He wrote to me some time ago and I was quite amused by his name. It reminded me of Tetley Teabags, which we use here, So of course I replied to him and in my usual tactless way reminded him about Techie Teabags. Since that time quite a friendship has ripened between us. We like each other, we write to each other, we exchange naughty jokes at times. Of course we have to be careful, we can't say our best jokes to either one of us because well, you know what it is when there are ladies in the house. They will read a letter sometimes and they wouldn't like a mere male to see that they couldn't blush after all. Anyway, Eric Tetley and I are good friends by correspondence. Jim Thompson is another good friend. He lives in the wilds of California. I always thought that all California was wild, especially as I have been there a few times. My. They are a wild lot there, aren't they? I'd better not tell you how many of the people I have mentioned above come from California. But Jim Thompson and I have been corresponding for a terrific time, we've got to know each other very thoroughly, and there is one peculiarity about Jim Thompson which I just must share with you. He seems to have cornered the world market in calendar pages going back to 1960, and invariably he writes to me on a calendar page dated 1960. I didn't know there were so many old calendars left in the world. Anyway, Jim Thompson and I are quite good friends. Glory be, do you know I have given 20 people already? 20, think of that. Still, some of you have asked about my friends so now you are getting some information about a few of them. I think we will mention just one more because this is a friend in Belgium, Miss Elsie Vanderporten. She is a very important lady indeed with many business interests and we write to each other not too often but enough to ensure that there is a good friendship. She is such a busy woman with her business interests that I think she hasn't too much time for private correspondence. I know just how she feels. I want, then, to say hello to Miss Vanderporten away in far-off Belgium. Well, those of you who have asked me about my friends and have impolitely intimated that I couldn't have any friends, you might be a little surprised, eh? Mind you, I know I have left out a lot of people in this small reference but if I added any more I am sure my publisher would have something to say. Hey though, Mr. Publisher. I've got you after all. You said you wanted a book answering readers' questions. Well, honorable sir, that's what I am doing, a lady libber, sorry, no women's libber can be a lady by their own admission, asked me if I didn't have any friends, and if I had, to list them on the back of a postage stamp. It would have to be a big postage stamp, wouldn't it? But I have given just a few, so I haven't broken any rules, Mr. Publisher. I am answering readers' questions. Chapter 4, it was a very nice sunny afternoon. Biggs, our guest from Vancouver, said, why don't I take you out this afternoon, go anywhere you like. I thought of all the work to be done, I thought of all the letters to be answered because I had been in hospital and a number of people had been informed of it explaining the delay in answering their letters. So everyone had started writing back asking all manner of questions and then people were asking more and more questions so I would have something to do when I got out of hospital. Yes, I have plenty to do. Then there was a book to be written. If I didn't get the typescript finished, the publisher couldn't give it to the printer to be set up. Then I thought, oh well, it does say somewhere that all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. I'm a dull boy anyway. So I'll go out. I trundled on to the car in my wheelchair and, with the usual difficulty, got into the car. The wheelchair was folded up and put in the trunk and off we went. This was my first trip out of the house since leaving the hospital some time before. Actually, it was the first opportunity I had had of seeing anything at all of Calgary because we have no car. We have no television either. Sometimes I believe there are programs about a city on TV, but I am barred from that also. On this day, then, we took off and headed toward the mountains leaving the city behind us, and went on climbing up the high rise of the foothills. First, though, we took a circuit around the hospital, the Foothills Hospital of Calgary, a very fine, very modern hospital. And the first thing we saw was a body being loaded from the mortuary into a hearse. We turned about and continued on over the river up into the rising ground. I could not go too far because now I tire so easily and suffer so much pain, so we stopped for a time on high ground where we could look over the city. Quite a pleasant city it is, too, with the winding rivers, the Bow and the Elbow threading their way through the city. The traffic was awful. We are told there are more cars per capita in Calgary than anywhere else in North America, and I well believe it. People seem to zoom along without a care in the world. Well, there are quite good hospitals to receive them,